Welcome to the FedSpeak podcast, brought to you by M&I Market News. I'm Jean Young, reporter in Washington. Last week, M&I launched our Emerging Market News product. It collects our exclusive reporting on major EM central banks, analysis just before and after key meetings, plus coverage on major macro developments. Check that out on our website and subscribe. To mark the occasion, we're talking about EM today. It's a really interesting moment for the global economy in many ways. We're out of the pandemic, but fighting wars in Ukraine and the Middle East. We had soaring inflation, followed by the biggest run-up in rates in decades. Yet, we haven't gotten the global recession that many had expected last year. There's another interesting development, and that is, in the past, when the Fed has raised rates, EM has seen heightened market volatility. In 2013, the Fed's attempt to scale back QE led to the taper tantrum that saw a sharp sell-off and massive capital outflows in emerging markets. But in this current Fed tightening cycle, emerging markets have displayed surprising resilience. Exchange rates have been relatively stable, there have been fewer defaults, and foreign investors have stayed put. So what's changed, and will things stay calm as the Fed keeps rates higher for longer? With me to discuss the topic is Jason Wu, Assistant Director overseeing the Global Market Analysis Group at the International Monetary Fund. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, Jean, for having me.
Great to have you. So before we get into it, let me run down the rest of your bio. Prior to the IMF, you spent a number of years at the Fed, most recently in the Division of International Finance, but also in monetary affairs and supervision and regulation. Between 2018 and 2021, you had a stint at the Hong Kong Monetary Authority, first heading economic research, later supervising banks and coordinating COVID-related relief programs. So, Jason, how would you contrast how emerging markets have fared in this current Fed tightening cycle with what happened a decade ago in the taper tantrum?
Thanks, Jean. I think that's a very important question. Over the past few years, emerging markets that have experienced inflation have actually moved relatively early in terms of their rate hikes, right? Many of them actually ahead of advanced economy central bank in hiking rates. That has provided them with a buffer because the rate of emerging market asset returns has kept pace, if not outpaced in some cases, advanced economy assets. So as you said, investors have stayed put, right? So this is a big incentive. So this has limited capital outflows and limited also exchange rate volatility. Some of these countries are also commodity exporters, so that has helped because increasing commodity prices 2 years ago was actually a tailwind for them. So that's one camp. In the other camp, you have emerging market economies like those in Southeast Asia. They didn't see much inflation, so their pressures on their central banks were not as high, right? Meaning that financial markets were also more sanguine about the prospects as well. And then I should also mention that the nature of the shock this time was quite different from back in the taper tantrum in 2013. After the pandemic, inflation was obvious pretty much everywhere around the world, right? So there are reasons for central banks to hike interest rates. And after all, this is the central bank's job, right, to contain inflation. And so their communications have been more in line with investor expectations. I would say that it was less of a surprise than during the taper tantrum, when some investors were left questioning why tapering QE was the right thing to do at that juncture. So I feel like that this time, the target of central banks and the actions that they undertook were aligned. So having said all of this, I think the challenge continues to loom large for emerging markets. While lots of progress on inflation has been made, the job isn't really done. And there could be bumps on the so-called last mile of disinflation, which requires them to manage policies cautiously.
So it has been noted that a lot of emerging markets did hike rates sooner than the Fed. A year or so later, the Fed did start hiking and rapidly ratcheted up rates. Now the differential is a lot narrower. Even so, EMs have not reacted as violently as they have in the past. Does that mean the Fed has become a less dominant force than in the past?
That's a great question. I think the short answer is no. So if we look at global financial markets, the attention on Fed decisions and to some extent, you know, other major central bank decisions is probably, one can argue, as high as before, right? But then it goes back to the question of, okay, so the fact that EMs are not reacting as much, it's not really because these major central banks are having less influence on markets. It's rather than they have the buffers that were built over the past 2 years, you know, also fiscal buffers, right, as they have managed fiscal policies through the pandemic, providing economic support on the one end, while also on the other hand, sort of like not going way overboard, right? All of that has packaged them to render into sort of like a story where, you know, they're generally more favorable to withstand this period of rate hike. But you're right that the policy differential is now narrowing. The interest rates between emerging markets and the Fed is lower, for example. As I said, there's a challenging period that could be ahead.
Hmm. Can you talk about some of the spillovers that we have seen then from the Fed and from gyrations in Treasury yields?
Sure. I think there are episodic ones, right? And I don't want to also underplay the fact that since the beginning of the year, EM currencies have indeed seen a period where they depreciated precisely because of the narrowing policy differential. I do think that authorities are more experience in handling these periods of volatility. For example, there are evidence that there is use of currency intervention, you know, at the right moments in order to contain market volatility. A lot of things in financial markets, as you know, are self-perpetuating. And so these timely interventions may have turned sentiments and other self-reinforcing forces around, meaning that price moves are, in fact, more in line with fundamentals than, shall we say, you know, during periods where volatility begets volatility.
Relative to the taper tantrum in other episodes, the environment has been pretty different, as you pointed out. Global financial conditions this time around have been a lot more benign. How much do you think that that's helped?
Yeah, there certainly is a tailwind to many economies, including in emerging markets. And I think, again, it goes back to this cycle in some ways is unusual. While rates are being hiked, you know, you have stock prices increase, bond spreads narrow. I do think that that in part speaks to sort of how businesses and households, right, which are essentially the core of our economy, have been relatively resilient during this time. And so financial conditions, you know, have not tightened, and they are, given their relatively good health, able to borrow at reasonable interest rates. And that's sort of why financial conditions have been easy. So I would say that, you know, financial conditions being easy is a symptom of a healthier sort of corporate and household sector, rather than being sort of like the main reason why markets haven't reacted as much, including in emerging markets. So the bottom line is, if these sectors are healthy, growth is being supported by them, therefore the overall picture looks a little bit more benign.
Mm. So this year, investors are expecting a lot of cuts, both in EM and possibly in the advanced economies as well. What would your advice be for EMs that are debating when to cut and how they should make those decisions?
I'm going to start from describing what EM central banks have done well. Obviously, they have gained a lot of credibility over the past two decades. Just taking a look based on outcomes, right? Inflation has successfully come down in many emerging markets towards the target set out by the central banks. This means that market has bought the credibility, right, of these places. Some of my colleagues at the IMF, for example, have looked at this issue more granularly and come to a conclusion that along, you know, a number of dimensions, including the range of central bank communications in EMs, measures of independence from the government, and credible targets, credible framework that they have set up, many EMs have made significant improvements along those dimensions. So this means they are getting closer to be able to use monetary policy for mainly domestic inflation purposes. And so while the global environment may be one where rate cuts are coming, or perhaps, you know, interest rates might stay higher, I do think that this credibility has, you know, allowed them to distinguish themselves from using monetary policy to meet their domestic inflation targets and perhaps use other tools like, you know, currency intervention that I mentioned before, or macroprudential tool to fend off other external pressures. So at the IMF, we tend to think of all these tools in something we call the integrated policy framework, where essentially, you know, credibility on the central bank's part allows monetary policy to focus more on inflation. That said, I think our advice for emerging market economies, central banks, is the same as ours for advanced economies, which is that notable progress on inflation. That's true. However, the job is not quite done. If you look around the world, a number of countries have not met their inflation targets yet. So they must commit to getting the job done.
Are there specific prescriptions on how best they can do that?
Yeah, so every country is different. Every emerging market face different headwinds. So it's difficult to summarize a one-size-fits-all prescription. But I do think generally that clear communications with the market and investors, helping them understand why certain monetary policy decisions have been taken, what are the external forces that these emerging markets are facing, how is that taking into account in their policy decisions, those are all key ingredients in ensuring that they can stay focused on bringing inflation down on the one hand, while on the other hand, containing exchange rate and capital flow volatility.
EM central banks used QE as a tool this time around. The scale was pretty small compared to the US, Europe, and Japan, and the purpose was more to stabilize markets than lower borrowing costs. How do you think that that tool has been used? Has it been helpful?
That's a great question. It's actually a very active area of research in economics. So I think overall, the research shows that central bank tools, they generally perform better when their purpose and implementation are well understood by the market. The pandemic, in this sense, was a supersized adverse shock, right? So whether it's in advanced economies or in emerging markets, it's understandable to the public why QE programs were launched to help stabilize markets, as you said, and in some cases, you know, actually to lower borrowing costs, right? What may have helped EM resilience during this period, like you said, is that these programs are modest in size, and therefore the unwinding is not as much of a challenge, right, for them, and that their terminal points were well understood. So once the QE programs paused, then it allows the central banks to once again pivot toward, for example, dealing with inflation beginning in 2022. So I think the conscious decision to limit these programs' footprints, but then launch them in decisive moments have actually helped.
So then should it become a regular part of their toolbox, and can it substitute for FX interventions or stop a run on the currency?
I think in terms of monetary policy, quantitative easing or quantitative tightening for that matter, there is a case to be made that it should be a regular part of the toolbox, right? Because while the policy rate affects the front end, it seems like that there needs to be some other tool that will affect the long end, right? Longer term interest rates. And that often comes in the form of quantitative easing or quantitative tightening. But, you know, does it replace currency intervention? I think the short answer is they target different things, right? While quantitative easing may have been focusing on domestic liquidity, currency interventions and other external tools are more aimed at sort of like the external environment. There are definitely some complementarities between the two, but I do think that they remain distinct enough tools because they deal with different situations, depending on whether it's domestic versus external.
So looking forward into the next year, you talk about staying vigilant as we fight this last mile of inflation. The Fed is talking about keeping policy tighter for longer to fend off a possible resurgence of inflation here. If that happens, would you expect global growth to stall out? Can we see some pain in the financial markets as a result?
So that would depend on the reason for the higher for longer. I think the Fed is proceeding cautiously. If inflation is stubborn, and that's the reason why interest rates remain high, I think this would be the right thing to do, right, for the Fed or any other central banks that are facing stubborn inflation. There will be some market volatility, as you allude to, because higher interest rates usually does that, right? And emerging markets in this case will be confronting, you know, higher global interest rates, which means that their own assets are less attractive to foreign investors that may buy them to calibrate their own policy response, etc. But in the long term, we think that this would be the right thing to do because inflation, after all, is quite detrimental to both the economy and to financial stability. So if inflation requires policy rates to remain higher for longer, some short-term volatility, overall, that would be the right thing to do. Now, it would be a different case if higher for longer happens while not being communicated adequately, right? That might be an issue. So to your point at the beginning about taper tantrum, that kind of comes to mind. Although, you know, at that point, policy wasn't necessarily tightening. It was just that accommodation was being slowly removed. In this case, investors are left to guess why rates would remain high, right? T- taking into account already information on inflation and growth. And this uncertainty will pass through to emerging economies and perhaps causing more issues than it would be in the first case. So again, I think it depends on whether the purpose of holding interest rates higher are well understood by the market.
Generally speaking, how does the Fed interface with emerging market central banks?
So it's really a question for the Fed, but you know, from what we have seen, they say they consider a range of information when making decisions, and this includes international developments. There are a number of international forums that I'm sure you know, you and your listeners know about as well, where central banks and finance ministers, for that matter, they gather and common concerns are being shared at those forums as well. I would say, though, it is clear the direction of causality, right? That it is really the global financial cycle is more driven by advanced economies than by emerging markets in most cases. And while emerging market developments may influence decision-making at the Fed and other advanced economies, it does seem like that the other way around is a little bit more potent.
What about China? The slowing growth in China has gotten a lot of attention in recent months. I know the Fed has said that it's not going to have a big impact on our domestic economy and thus our decisions on interest rates and so on. But how can that affect its trading partners locally in Asia and in other EMs?
Right. So I think the U.S. economy obviously is a little bit more closed, right? You know, the U.S. is just so large that the open portion is, while it's large in absolute terms, in relative terms, it's not as big as, say, the open economy portion of smaller emerging markets. So I think the slowdown in China, like you said, will definitely have impact on regional peers. I think it's probably also useful to think about what are the more nearer term impact versus the longer term impact. Things like, you know, slowing economy leading to less trade, you know, those are unlikely going to cause financial turbulence or financial market instability. It's more of a macroeconomic story. So in that sense, China's impact on emerging markets may not be one of a sudden financial shock, but rather sort of like an economic impact over the longer term. That said, we do think that credible policies in China to restore, for example, the confidence of home buyers, which will lift economic confidence in general and household spending, for example, that would certainly be helpful to China and by extension to its trading partners in the emerging economies as well.
Okay, but what about the risk of escalation of the conflicts in the Middle East? The attacks in the Red Sea have already disrupted shipping. That heightens uncertainty, which eventually hurts investment and growth, and it could also be inflationary.
Right. That's certainly the case. Luckily, we haven't really seen this pass through so far in terms of both shipping costs as well as commodity prices. But an escalation may indeed be an inflation shock that we don't want to see. And while the world has seen this kind of supply side shock, right, over the past 3 or 4 years, each supply shock comes with a different flavor. So the experience may not fully mitigate, right, the surprise element, depending on how conflicts were to escalate. Obviously, that's not something that any of us want to see.
Right. Anything else on your mind as you watch the world economy over the next year?
In terms of the emerging markets, we were, like many other commentators and analysts, pleasantly surprised by their resilience. In terms of some of the even lower rated, you know, emerging market economies who are trying to access the international funding markets, they are also coming back online and finding these opportunities, right? So I think all in all, the direction is positive. But I just want to reiterate that, you know, central banks must remain vigilant on inflation. Back and forth inflation gyrations or a de-anchoring of inflation expectations have historically proven to be very costly to the economy and to financial stability. So I think this is the, you know, overall landscape that we face, and this is the risk that we have to be very attuned to.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Jason, for joining me on FedSpeak.
Thank you, Jean, for having me.